Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! Oh, LeBron James with no regard for human life.
12 seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang! Iverson against Gill. The crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up? What up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. I believe we're up to episode number 10 now, and my name's Nick Engvall. I'm here with my guys, Mike Guillory and Robbie Fauci. Guys, go ahead and introduce yourself.
What's going on, everybody? It's Mike Guillory here. I hope you guys are having a great day. What's going on, Robbie?
Man, I'm chilling like J.B. Bickerstaff because he's got fired from the Grizzlies. So I'm just going to be chilling like...
Yeah, there was a lot of cleaning house today. So before we get into this episode, wanted to shout out Carolina Jace for leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Yeah, we just really appreciate you guys leaving us reviews. It lets us know what you like about the show. It lets us, you know, get a little bit higher up those charts and get to more people and hopefully get a bigger audience and share more of the love for sneakers that we have. So we really appreciate that. And if you get a chance to do that, drop us a tweet, comment on Instagram, let us know that you did it so we can check it out. That said, I think let's just get into quick news. Robbie, I'll let you start it off.
Yes, sir. So my big thing, and I had a thought today, we got some official release information. Well, not information, but photos of the new 350 Boost V2 in all black. And it got me thinking, like, what's like an accurate comparison for that shoe? And in my brain, it goes back to the Pirate Blacks, like the now $1,000 resell, very pretty black with some gray thrown in their Yeezys. And I was just going to kind of open this up to everybody, but do you think that shoe is like an equivalent? Do you think it's going to be as hot? Are you feeling it? Like, what are you guys thinking?
I mean, I think it's a nice looking shoe. I was telling you earlier, I think this might be the one. If the stars align, this may be one to make you pull a trigger on a pair of Yeezys. In regards to it being as hot as the Pirate Blast,
or even like not because that set that had like the black with the copper, black with infrared, and black with green, I want to say.
Yeah. Like, I don't remember. There was like white, red. I guess it was green. Was it green? Like a tan kind of?
Yeah. Something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I know what pack you're talking about, though. It's like that Black Friday pack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just think people are, I mean, they've redone the V2 to like this cool, like, kind of had a see-through portion. But I think it's going to sell out, but it's not going to have the same effect as the Pirate Black, because the Pirate Black was, you know, the second colorway of the Yeezy to come out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think people are just kind of, you hear it all the time. They're like, can we get a new model? I think people are starting to get a little tired of the V2, just a little overwhelmed with all the colors that's coming out. And it's all, more power to Kanye. He said that everyone's going to get a pair of Yeezys, so I definitely respect that. But I think people are just waiting for the next thing. They're gonna buy them, but not as much excitement behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the color is super dope, but personally am kind of, I don't know, like I'm not really a fan of the, like, even the V1 or the V2, to be honest. Like, I like it to a certain extent, but it's not something I could see myself wearing. It kind of reminds me of the Roshe, and
I was never really a fan of that shoe, although like I think it's great because it gets more people excited about sneakers, which that I appreciate. But I actually tend to lean towards like the bulkier shoes anyway. So, you know, for me, like the Wave Runner is
runner.
It's just a better looking shoe, right? Like if they did, you know, I think there's the black and 3M of that coming. So I'd rather wait for that one.
Like a V2 350. No, V2 700.
Or yeah, 700. Yeah, 700. Yeah. Yep. But I do think it's a dope shoe. I do think I like the comparison to the Pirate Blacks because it is really like the first, you know, we talked about the color palette that Kanye has chosen to use with Adidas over the past, you know, let's say year and a half. And it's been really so close across all these releases. So this one definitely like kicks it back to, all right, we're out of that, like, you know, 50 shades of tan that he's been on. and I think that's a good thing, right? But I don't know. It'll be interesting because if it's limited enough, it'll still go crazy, you know, but I wonder, like you said, Mike, where the approach is to everybody wearing Yeezys or everybody being able to get Yeezys. Is that, you know, like, was it like the triple whites, right? Those were reproduced and restocked and, you know, like re-released, like it seemed like forever, over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be dope if these were like the binary to that. Like if they're going to make a mass white one, they could mass produce black one.
Yeah. And I'd be okay with that. Yeah. I don't mind if you being mass produced. I just don't like when it comes down to the excitement in the eyes of a sneakerhead. I don't know how they're going to feel about it, but like I say, I like it so much. This might be the one I pull the trigger on.
Well, like yes or no question, kind of to wrap up that thought. Does it feel like the V2 with the stripe put in it is a different shoe than the original V2? Does it feel like a V3? Like yes or no?
Nah.
It does a little bit to me, yeah.
It kind of does to me too. Like, really? It's like, because ultimately the V1 and V2 sitting on the same midsole tooling, sitting on a lot of the same exact elements, like identical elements, but just a little twist. So it's very modular. So I think they're different enough. Like they could get away with calling this like a V3 in my book.
Well, you know what this reminds me of? If like just kind of how those like those slight changes. It's just like how they used to have the elite Nikes. Like you have the LeBron 9, you have like the LeBron 9 postseason and LeBron 9 elite. It's kind of like that same like concept. Like we're gonna
Bit to tweak it. That's a good point. I didn't think of that. It's like a variant of what's already out there. So no, that's a good point. Which talking about variants, kind of brings us to a shoe we've seen many various different cuts and versions of. The Jordan Trunner is coming back for like the millionth time without a Travis Scott or OVO partnership behind it. So how are we feeling about that? Digging it?
It's different. I have a pair of the last retro they did back in, was that 2017. I have a pair of like the royal and black ones. I mean, they're cool to have. It's one of the shoes I liked when I was a kid, so that was the reason I got it. But looking at the pictures, it still looks too bulky to be an actual trainer. I mean, I know it has React in it now, which is the Jordan really pushing that React technology along with Nike. But I just don't. I think we're going to see a little bit of it, then it's going to disappear again.
Yeah,
good point.
Yeah, that is a good point. I'm a big fan of the Trunner, like the whole line. Just basically,
in the mid-run?
The Trunner LX that came out. I think that came out 2017 too. That like kind of
that's the one.
With the zipper on the side. Yeah. Like I actually really like that shoe. And I think it's more of a nostalgia thing. You know, because the originals were so dope when they first came out. It was like the first time you saw Jordans in a way that wasn't strictly basketball, right? I mean, they did the dress shoe stuff for a little bit there too around that time, but it was like, this is the first time that you could see wearing it. You know, it would be a really dope summer shoe. I'm kind of, I don't know, like adding the React to everything. Although, you know, I do 100% think that React is very, very comfortable. I just feel like adding it just to everything is kind of just, I don't know, lazy, I guess. But on this particular one, I just don't think that like the Jumpman on the side fits very well. If you threw a swoosh on the shoe, you'd probably sell more of it, you know?
Yeah, it looks out of place.
Yeah, it does look really out of place. But this one just looks funky to me. It looks like what?
It looks like a Chris Paul basketball shoe.
Yeah, kind of.
It kind of does, yeah. I see where you're coming from with that.
Which, I love those Chris Paul shoes. It's a whole other story. But I definitely, kind of to segue off what Nick said about throwing React on it and calling it a different shoe or it is a modification, like that's not just Nike's MO, like Adidas Stan Smith with boots. Like, yeah. You know, they're going to throw whatever new tech they have onto something old to try to like, you know, kind of, you know, grasp at straws. You're just like, okay, somebody's going to feel the nostalgia and want the new tech and think it's cool. It's niche. Oh, yeah. Like, again, like those are the kind of people those are the people that do move the needle, who are buying them more every day. Mm-hmm. Oh, these look cool. These are at Dick's Sporting Goods. I'm going to try them out.
Yeah,
exactly. And this is one of those shoes that's like the retail will be, I don't know, $140 or something, right? And you'll see them at Dick's Sporting Goods for like $70 and you'll be able to sit there and see people come into the store that you'd be like, yep, that guy's going to buy a pair.
Mm-hmm. I know what this guy's buying, but yeah, they're going to need to go on sale real quick.
But yeah, shifting gears. I was just going to say, you know, kick it to you, Mike, because we're about to talk about your hometown with Travis Scott and what he's got up his sleeve.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows every time you look up, Travis Scott has something new from Jordan Brand on, and I mean, I'll be honest, it's like he's getting treated better than some of the Jordan Brand athletes right now. But we've seen some pictures that there's another Air Force One low coming out from Travis Scott. And from the pictures, it has a real like outdoorsy Carhartt kind of vibe to it. Not something I'm really clamoring to get my hands on. I can say that I like the first ones a whole lot better. I guess it won't make me look at it differently, but I like to know the story behind it of what made him choose that type of design and those materials, because it looks like those things are ready for some kind of a camping trip. I mean, what do you guys think about it?
I said this earlier, it's like the quintessential Action Bronson shoe. If switch up the Travis Scott really quick. But, you know, I was playing myself as a sucker, telling myself I didn't like the first version of the Air Force One he did. But now every time I see it, I'm like, you played yourself, not even trying to get that shoe. So I love that it's different. It's not the norm, so to speak. But I'm really not going to go out of my way to try to acquire a pair. But they're cool. Let's put it that way. Like, they're enjoyable to look at. But
yeah,
that's about it for me. How about you, Nick?
I think I can just say I feel exactly the same. I mean, personally, I don't really wear Air Force Ones ever. It's not a shoe that I think it's heavy and uncomfortable. And if I'm going to wear a heavy and uncomfortable shoe, I'd rather wear a Jordan 1 or an SB Dunk. But I do like that he's doing something different and bringing a bunch of different materials together, because it would be so easy with someone with his star power to just be like, you know, and not to say that he shouldn't, but like, let's just say throw Houston Astros colors on an Air Force One and boom, you're gold, right?
That's true, man.
He kind of did that with the Jordan 4 with the Oilers colors, but it was done in just a unique enough way. I mean, I know the quality of those wasn't up to people's liking, but I think that he's got a good mix of uniqueness in his stuff and, you know, nostalgia as well. So
unique. this is my made up word, uniquity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think it's cool that he's, you know, still pushing forward with, you know, you know, not to be punny, but outside the box thinking, right? I just think that it's, I think that, you know, he's even with his like merch, it's, you know, you can see there's like kind of a formula to his designs and his style, and it would be easy for him to like plug in, you know, like you said, basic kind of sneaker collabs. And so I appreciate that, but it's definitely not going to be on like a list of mine for picking up or anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's done a great job with both Nike and Jordan brand at putting out some really just eye-catching collaborations. I mean, no hate towards Drake, but his are just, you know, black and gold, white and gold. Here you go. At least I like Travis. Actually, it looks like he's involved. He's in the room. He's putting some thought behind it. Because he seems like a pretty unique person. I mean, I don't know him personally, but through his music, you can tell that he's a real unique personality. So it looks like he tries to draw it out in his sneakers. So even though I'm not a fan of this particular one, I can appreciate what he's done with it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it looks, like we said earlier, it looks a little bit like Carhartt material. It looks like there's like a, you know, kind of like a plaid or tartan material on the tongue, like a, you know, like a lumberjack shirt or something. And
yeah,
releasing it in October with those kind of things on it, I think is going to be super dope for people that are fans of the shoe. You know, to your point about Drake, I actually, as much as I probably don't like to admit it, I think Drake's like just ridiculously simple white and gold, black and gold, like, or jersey matching colorways is spot on for his like personal brand, because he's just such an old school kind of dude when it comes to dressing and stuff and fan of sports and stuff, you know, like in that sense, like I would say, like he reminds me of myself in the way that, like, I look at a pair of shoes and I instantly think, okay, what basketball shorts can I wear with that? Or what jersey can I wear with those shoes? You know, like that's like my first thought usually. So,
Yeah, you know, I guess I didn't think about it like that. I just kind of kept seeing the same colorways. But I kind of get the perspective. Yeah, it makes sense for who he is and his style. So, okay. Sorry, Drake. I apologize.
It literally is a brand. Like, black gold is OBO. Like,
yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
So it is what it is, but I like it too. I was actually thrifting a couple days ago and I saw an OVO Drake sweatshirt. It's black and gold and it was a double XL. So I didn't buy it. Then this like skinny 15-year-old kid went and bought it.
And then, oh yeah.
You're going to flip that. Should have done it. I didn't think of it, but I'm a big fan of leaving stuff. If it's not my size, let somebody come across it and be happy that day.
Oh man.
Off tangent. Speaking of resale.
Segue.
Yeah, right.
Well, so we got Space Jam and Fragment on the list to talk about. So which one you want to take on first?
Let's go with Space Jam. I think we probably have a little bit more to say about the Fragment, so let's hear a little bit of the Space Jam news.
So the gist of it is that people are having a hard time casting for Space Jam 2 because of the contracts between the brands and their athletes. So, you know, guys like Steph Curry and James Harden can't be in it because obviously they have deals with, you know, Under Armour and Adidas, respectively, and I think, you know, so full disclosure, I only just saw Space Jam for the first time probably 4 or 5 months ago, and
what?
Yeah, I know, it's crazy, but I always just felt I always just felt like it was just a commercial for Nike's, and I saw enough of the clips and I saw enough of the, you know, like I was super fanboy about everything Nike, so it just, I don't know, it was never on my thing, on my to-do list. And I just, you know, just recently, like when my girlfriend and my friend Mitch found out that I hadn't seen it, they were like, you're watching this. So I've seen
it. How do you feel?
What's up?
Well, how do you feel about it? What was your reaction? Like, one out of
well, so
one bad. Good.
Obviously, like, I would say it's probably in the 6 or 7 range, right? Being that I'm older now, I look at it and think, you know, I'm comparing it to, you know, like, unconsciously, I'm comparing it to more modern movies, right? So part of that was kind of like, yeah, all right, it was okay. But then thinking about, like, that era and how big, you know, Warner Brothers, like, you know, like Iceberg clothing was, and how, I mean, everybody was rocking, you know, Looney Tunes stuff. And it was just a part of, it was almost as big a part of streetwear back in the 90s as basketball was, in my opinion. So that, that part of it, I actually really appreciated. And I, you know, the story's cool. Like the story, you know, I would love to, you know, as soon as I watched it, I was like, oh, I want to watch this with my nephews. You know, like, it's definitely a good, like, entertaining film. But it still was one of those things where I just feel like we're at a point where, and this kind of issue that's coming up with Space Jam 2 casting, we're at a point where it's getting really difficult to know when to say when about brands creating the entire storyline. And I don't think that it'll ever change. I think that, you know, Nike's just going to progressively create more movies, and Adidas the same. And, and you know, that's, everybody's creating content, and content eventually grows to, like, movie level, you know, stuff. But I just always kind of was, like, a little sus of the whole concept as a teenager when it first came out. So I don't know. I'm kind of indifferent to it, you know, as much like if you take out, you know, my thought of like having, you know, my nephews with me or my niece and getting to show it to them and talk about, you know, the sneakers and Jordan and Barkley and Bill Murray and all those characters, then I don't really have any, I'm not like much of a fan of it. But
yeah,
that said, I understand that it's super important part of sneaker history and the story, and it got a lot of people into sneakers that otherwise would have never paid attention to them. So,
I'm sorry, Nick, but Space Jam is not John Wick. You're not going to see Wile E. Coyote with him. Hand-to-hand combat training.
True.
Hand combat training. But, you know, as a kid, like, I can definitely see as a teenager and an adult kind of being jaded by the corporate mentality of a movie like that. But I guess not. I saw it as a kid, and I still have vintage Space Jam Christmas ornaments at my mom's house. I have Bugs Bunny and Sylvester. But then, it was just like, oh, Bill Murray's funny. There's secret stuff. There's aliens. Like, you don't get the consumerism. And it's not just shoes, but I notice it in everything. Like, what's the angle? Where's the dividends being made here? So it's kind of funny how they're running into problems casting because of some of those. When you think about it in the most bare bones sense, was Sean Bradley that big of a star? Like, when he was... Like, for real, like, you could have kind of just, like, average Joe. I'm trying to think of, like, Ilya Silva, but I don't think he's Nike either.
That's what they're saying. They're going to just have a bunch of average, like, Nike guys.
But, dude, Carl Anthony Towns is very kid-friendly, and I have a feeling he wouldn't have a problem doing something like that. D'Angelo Russell, there's a lot of, like, young kids, De'Aaron Fox. Like, there's a lot of young kids you could put in there still. I think Kyle Kuzma would be really good. But, like, there, you can't get the top echelon stuff because money's in the way, you know?
Yeah.
And that's ultimately, you see that as an adult. And now that we record stuff and report on things, we're having a story, you know, 15-minute segment about it. But it's kind of like, no, it's no news, but it is news at the same time to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to, I was just going to say, and to your point, right, like Kevin Durant saying that he doesn't want to be a part of it, Giannis basically saying he doesn't want to be a part of it. I feel like all these guys see that and they're like, well, I want to do my own thing. You know, like,
yeah.
I think deep down they know that LeBron is like absolutely the biggest star in basketball. But if they wait 2-3 years and they potentially could do their own thing with Nike behind them. And, you know, I that part of it is really interesting to me at this point, because, you know, we kind of saw it with Kyrie and Uncle Drew, right? Like, I just feel like all these stories, and even like we posted, you know, the LeBrons today on Instagram. I love all those little stories, and I love all these like characters, like the MV puppets from a few years back. Like, that stuff to me is like amazing. For some reason, I struggle to have the, like, I don't know if it's excitement or what, but like the idea of going to watch like an hour and a half or a 2 hour movie that I know is just a commercial, no matter what brand it comes from, is not really appealing to me. And I'd rather see, you know, maybe it's short versions and a story drawn out across a couple of months of a campaign that I can get behind and be, you know, excited about to see the next episode or whatever. But for some reason, I just like kind of like default against the whole idea. But
isn't Star Wars a huge marketing campaign for toys, though?
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I know it's so hypocritical to even think that, because that's what everything is, right? But I mean,
but I know what you're saying, and it's weird to think of it though, because like when I saw a movie, I was a kid too, so I didn't like I didn't, it wasn't until I was older that I realized like, oh, there's sneakers behind it. Like, but it's really weird though as an adult to sit and look at it, like, man, because I didn't realize until I was talking to you guys earlier, it's like, crap, this is a big Nike commercial. And then you mentioned Uncle Drew, which is actually not a half bad movie. It's a big Foot Locker commercial.
Yeah.
And Pepsi.
Yeah, Foot Locker and Pepsi commercial.
Yeah.
And like, holy crap, I didn't even think of that.
To that point too, like, I mean, you know, you had Shaq on the other side of that back in the day, where like his whole thing coming into the league was like, oh, I just want to, you know, drink Pepsi, wear Reeboks, and, you know, play basketball or whatever. And it, I mean, it's all just a big advertising thing, right? These guys are entertainers and they're getting paid to entertain. But I don't know. What's even crazier is like my first pair of Jordans was a charcoal Air Jordan 9, which, you know, obviously Jordan 9 is like one of the big shoes in the movie. So
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. I have all the right things in place to be like super into it and have it be one of my favorite movies, but it just never was for some reason. But so shifting gears, I think the fragment design Jordan 3, I guess leaked this week. I don't know. It was seen on Hiroshi Fujiwara's feet or somebody's Instagram. I can't remember where I saw it originally.
Yeah, it was him. Someone take my money now. I want them.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think about those ones, Robbie?
Man, they're pretty darn cool. It's like they keep mixing up the silhouette. Like, they keep using completely different, you know, silhouettes with it, so it remains fresh. But I don't really have that much that I don't have like a deep connection to it or feeling. Like, it's not like it's not tickling my fancy, so to speak, all that much. How about you guys?
I like it. I mean, I guess this is probably the fragment design Jordan is probably one shoe I can admit to fully being a hype beast over, because it was just a simple, cool looking shoe, and I wanted it. I didn't get it. I mean, let's just be honest. What happened? That's what it stems from. The one from it comes from you never having it. And I think it's cool. I mean, just I like clean colorways, and that 3 just takes a variant of the fire red color and adding blue to it, just like they did with the Jordan 1. They took the black toe and made it hit the red, blues and whatnot. But doing some more looking at it, apparently if you look at the lateral side of the shoe on the midsole, it says summer 17.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah, so it looks like it might have been a prototype or a maybe just a rejected model from a couple years back.
A tester.
Yeah.
Man, like, you're 100, like, you're getting a hype beast feel. I get that, like, jaded sneakerhead feel when I look at fragments. It's just like, man, I don't have $2,000 right now. So it's like,
oh, it's saddening when you look at it. It's like, I
can't. Right. Like, I see the people from Index Portland, like the consignment shop, the sneaker shop up the street, and they'll be rocking them like while they're at work. They say, man, must be chilling.
Yeah.
So, like, Nick, which one's your, if you had to have a fragment, like, which one speaks to you?
Go ahead, Nick. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if I take away the Jordan 1, like, that's just an easy answer because everyone wants that one. But oddly enough, my favorite fragment design sneaker is the white and green Wimbledon Air Trainer 1. And I forgot how much I liked it until I was doing some digging for this episode. And I saw it again. And the fact they're sitting around for about $150, $175 bucks kind of gives me that itch. Like, I think I may need to go get this then.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I like the royal blue on the ones, the threes. Like, I, you know, if I had no restrictions, just give me a pair of these threes just because it's, That's a crazy colorway for the three, just because you don't see it very often on anything that's,
yeah,
obviously it's never released anything close to that. But I agree. The Jordan one's like, I think Robbie, you touched on it last week or at some point recently where there's a formula for Jordan ones that works. And if you follow that formula and throw in a nice color to go in with like the kind of traditional Jordan color blocking, then mm-hmm. you can't really go wrong with it, you know? But outside of that, I probably would go with like I like the trainer ones, from a few years back too. There's like black. I mean, there was just so many colors of that though. And I think that's why most people probably slept on them because you could get any of those colors for 70, 80 bucks by the time, you know, they ran their course in the malls. But I like the, I think there was like the LD 1000, which was like kind of like a Cortez Roshi mashup.
Yeah.
That one is pretty dope. I think that was probably one of the first times I saw the unfinished tongue that like the off-white shoes typically
have. Yeah. With that foam visible.
Yeah. Visible foam. That was the first time I remember it. I mean, I could go back and maybe find something else that I would remember, but that's the first one that comes to mind for sure, which I think that's pretty cool. And I think it was cool to see them do in the same concept as like you said, having the, you know, the model number and the manufacturing date or like the season that the sample was from made it onto the production model of that version, which I think was cool. That was probably the one thing that kept me from getting the trainer ones the first time around, because there was real no, you know, solid colors. This is kind of, you know, Fragment's formula, right? They don't really do anything too crazy. They just take classic stuff, put it together in a way that we haven't seen it, and, you know, maybe emboss the logo or something like that. So, but I also think that, you know, it's a formula that works, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it works perfectly for them. That's their MO. It's like, keep it simple. I want to say the Air Trainer 1 had a softer leather than normal,
yeah,
if I remember correctly. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it's something nice and clean and simple can, you know, be just as loud as something loud, bright, and ridiculous.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just like, I remember seeing my outlets too, and they were nicer leather, but they were also an easier type of leather to crease. And if I remember correctly, every pair I saw had like a good old, it's like somebody stored the shoe wrong.
Yeah.
And like a nice, like 4 foot crease on it. You're like, not for me. But like the simplicity of it is cool. Especially if you look at like the sock dart also. If you were to tell me that's just a normal ass sock dart, I believe you. Like, and that's their MO. But it's not special enough to like be excited for and like, you know, be hyped.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize they did so many different shoes. I remember that they did the tennis classics. They're just white with the red, green, and blue tabs on the back. They did a maroon and then an all maroon and all navy tennis classic. But they did the Hyper Rev. Did
yeah
Hyper Chases.
They did Rev. Yeah.
Yep. It was those shoes there. I know they were trying to push those. That was there. There's a big their team model back then, so they were really trying to push them. But I just didn't. When I saw the pictures again, I'm like, I wonder why he would agree to those, because they didn't seem like something he'd normally do. He looks like he would mostly touch on classics as opposed to the performance basketball sneakers.
Yeah, it was a little out of character, but like we kind of touched on the amount. We were surprised by the amount of shoes there are, but yeah. He's an integral part of what they've been doing design wise for like specialty of like normal shoes for quite a long time, like the HTM line.
Yeah. Yep.
Like the pinnacle of Nike creative thought, I almost want to say, you know, like the three biggest, like you don't get put on the same pedestal as Mark and Tinker unless you've been doing it and you're like iconic. Like,
yeah.
Which I'm not the biggest master of Japanese streetwear like knowledge, but like he's worked from areas, not just Nike, but like Clot, Undercover. Like every really huge brand, obviously Atmos, but like he's it, so to speak, and has been it, just like the silent killer.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, there's so many to. So we were talking about it before, but if to those that are listening, if you get a chance, listen to Hiroshi on Jeff Staples' podcast with Hypebeast. I forget the name of the, what's the name of the podcast?
Business of Hype.
Yeah. Business of Hype. It's just a great, it's a great kind of insight into how he works. And it comes like, he's so intelligent, but he's very simple, right? Like he lives very simply and it explains a lot why a lot of their designs are very simple. But yeah, I think the first time, I'm trying to think of like the first time I remember seeing like a Fragment collab, and I know they did like Air Force Ones and Dunks, and then they also did one of the Footscapes. Footscape is the one that has like the lacing like on the side, right? I forget what you call that, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, kind of like the Footscape, asymmetrical.
Yeah,
you're.
That to me was super dope. Like it was like I think it was like the Royal Blue, right? Just coming back to like full circle, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't remember Royal when that Blue came out. 2009, 2010 or something maybe. I feel like it's been a long time. What do you guys remember like the first time you remember seeing a Fragment shoe?
It was the Jordan 1 was the first one I realized what it was. That's when I really started taking like deep dives into sneakers, like looking at history and stuff behind them. And yeah, it was the Jordan 1. I remember, you know, scouring through the Hypebeast website, the Nice Kicks, Sneaker News, all those good things like that, and just seeing them, and it were just immediately just caught my eye, because I've always been a big fan of the Royal Air Jordan 1, and just always, so the blue and white on the Jordan 1 just looked fantastic to me. And I remember looking at one of actually the Hypebeast Essential videos, and Louis Vuitton style director Kim Jones, that he just like will wear them and beat them to death and just get a new pair once he beat them down. And it blew my mind.
Must be nice.
And I know. I was like, oh, must be so nice to do that.
And my first one was the KD6 Elite. I was working at Foot Locker then, and I had a lot of KD6s. At the time,
long story short, the
CIO is a snake. Gary's a nice guy. He's not a snake, but I remember seeing, having owned KD6s and looking at it, it was like a completely like monochrome embossed upper with this like simple yellow accent. And I remember thinking, damn, that thing's ugly. I'm not going to buy it or wear it, but I respect the craftsmanship. Like a looks like a fine leather German shoe, but it's neither German nor leather. But it just has kind of like a well-constructed vibe to it.
That's interesting. I totally forgot about that one.
Bro, I can't get it out of my head. I remember seeing it, and I'm just like, man, like,
holy crap.
It's kind of like so many of the EXT, there's been so many EXT KDs that have gone under the radar and forgotten in time. And like that kind of had the same vibe of it. So I don't believe it did very hot, if I remember.
No, I'm looking at it right now. I did not. I barely remember the shoe.
Man, they did a ton of KD6 things. They did like a whole lifestyle line of this horrendous KD6s. And if anybody on Team KD is listening to this, I'm super sorry, but I'm sure you guys know like that was not.
Well, let's see here. So, good old StockX. Okay, in my size, this fragment KD6 is $190 in the that khaki color, but the blue color is like $400.
Oh, the blue one. See, that must be some kind of sample friends and family crap, because
most likely.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, the blue and white one is it's pretty rough in price.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, quick little PSA, actually. I've had a couple people ask me about samples when I do like Samples Sunday on the site. And yes, samples come in other sizes than 9.5. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, so most definitely.
It's a little testament to that. But a sample could be anything from the exact same shoe you buy at a store with just a sample tag in it to the craziest shoe on earth. So they come in a variety of sizes. So keep your dreams open, kids. If you were not 9.5 stressed,
the more you know.
Yeah. Right. So I guess that pretty much wraps it up. I'm gonna actually put together like a list of fragment collabs on the site that'll go up as this podcast goes live. So if you're listening and you want to see some of the stuff that we're talking about, you can go to sneakerhistory.com and check out the list of fragment collabs. And you know, we'll all just keep our fingers crossed and that those threes actually some day come out. But that said, thanks.
883 phone home.
Exactly. That pretty much wraps it up. I don't know, we haven't done it a couple weeks, so you guys want to pick sneaker of the week kind of thing that we saw this week?
Ooh, why not? Now you make me think, though. I'm like,
While you're thinking about that, I will just throw mine out there to stall you some more time. There's no photos of it yet, but it's been on the internet for like 6 months that there's supposed to be an undefeated Kobe 4, allegedly, this month.
Ooh.
I don't think it's happening still this month. But it's just been on the radar. I see it on like, you know, release calendar still. I really want to see that shoe because I will buy the hell out of that thing. I love Undefeated. Shout out to Undefeated. One of my brands I really feel passionately about. I would just love to have that thing. So that's my pick.
Cool. Well, mine is actually this. I don't know if I'm going to say it right. It's that Sakai Nike Blazer that has like the dunk pieces on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a real big Blazer fan, but this one just looks super cool. Like the double tongue on it, and the like I say, the eyelets have the dunk eyelets on top of the Blazer one. Just like a real creative looking piece. That's my pick. Definitely something I heard is super limited, so I'm going to be always looking at it from afar. So it's fine, but it's a cool idea.
Appreciating.
Yeah, like a fine art piece.
Yeah, so first I'm gonna say that my pick is definitely not the Flightposite one that has the like contrasting piping. That shoe is so terrible. I don't even know why they even tried to do that, but
they got bored.
Yeah, seriously, I just feel like somebody was like, just like woke up and was like, hey, wait, what? I gotta have this turned in today.
But, finish my homework.
Yeah.
Man. all we need is the green one all the time. It's that nice metallic green.
Yeah.
That's the only colorway should ever exist.
Yep. So I guess my pick would probably be, just because it's super weird, I actually really like the Pyre Moss, was it the Reebok Mobius? It has like the crazy zipper thing across the front of it. I don't know that I'd ever wear it, but I just think it's dope that they actually made it, because it's so bizarre.
Man, they should do a Reebok Morpheus with like some skinny ass glasses on.
Oh my red God. And blue. Make a red and blue one for you.
Yeah. That would be pretty dope, actually. So the thought of them actually going through with the idea and doing something with it would be amazing. But so let's wrap up. Let's actually, before we do that, if you have a sneaker of the week that we should be talking about that we're just, you know, blindly not looking at, let us know what it is for you. What should we be looking forward to release wise? And as we said earlier, if you get a chance, leave us a review on iTunes. But we appreciate you guys listening. And my name is Nick Engvall. You can follow at Sneaker History on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, sneakerhistory.com. More importantly, why don't you guys go ahead and tell them where they can find you?
Yeah, you guys can find me, Sneaker History as well. Find me on Instagram and Twitter at MadWatcher789. And guys, just thank you for all the comments and everything you guys have been saying. It helps out a lot. Appreciate you. Robbie, where can I find you, man?
You can find me in Good Housekeeping, Lumberjack and Quarterly, a couple places. Martha Stewart Magazine. But you can also find me on the internet at Robbie702 on various platforms you're probably already using. So yeah, thank you for everybody's support too. You and everybody rock.
Right on. Thanks for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. We'll catch you next time. Peace.
See ya.
Hey, what up guys? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I just want to let you know a couple things we're working on here at Sneaker History. We're about to start a weekly newsletter to share some of the things that we find from around the web that's interesting, entertaining, newsworthy stuff. And instead of putting it all on social, maybe it's not worth posting on the blog, but we wanted it to just be on your radar. So it's kind of like a compilation of our favorite things from the week. And we'll be sending that out on Sundays just to make sure that you have the news from the previous week and maybe some news about the upcoming week in terms of releases, you know, changes in release dates, etc. You can sign up for that now at sneakerhistory.com. The second thing is that we finally launched a web store to sell some Sneaker History merchandise. So far, we've got some tees, stickers, coffee mugs, and some other goods in the works. And the money we make from this will go to pay for hosting and production of things like this podcast. You can find that on the top right menu of our website. If you do cop some merch, be sure to tag us in your social posts so we can repost. Thanks again for all your support, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.